Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Australian Baby Boomer Podcast. Well, today's guest is Michael Thomas, and Michael has written a book entitled The Map of William. So it's Western Australia, 1909, and William Watson's beloved father is set on an expedition to the northwest to map water sources in the Pilbara. Invited along, 15-year-old William embarks on the outback journey of a lifetime. At sea and on land, William will forge lasting friendships with his fellow travellers and transform his relationship with his father as together they face the darkness in some men's hearts, including the cruel and vengeful Sergeant Jardine. The Map of William is a gripping, adventurous tale about the triumph of friendship and the price of survival in a land with its own ancient story to tell. So Michael Thomas was born and raised in Carnarvon in Western Australia and spent his formative years travelling across the vast Gascoyne Pilbara region with his father, who was a shearer. After graduating from university, Michael returned to teach in the Gascoyne Murchison before eventually settling in Perth. He retired in 2021 to write his memoirs, but gave up when fact and fiction became entangled. The Map of William is his first novel. We met outside at the Fremantle Arts Centre, hence some of the background ambience. There was some renovations and things going on. So please enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, and thanks, Michael, for agreeing to do this. And I loved your book, The Map of William. So maybe we could just begin by you telling us a little bit about yourself, just a little bit about your background and how that ties in with the book you decided to write.
Well, my background, Iris, is a teacher for 40 years in a classroom, and retired in 2021. It was probably then I sat down and I thought, well, what am I going to do for the next so many years of my life? And then decided, well, perhaps writing was something that I'd always planned to do, but never really had time to do it. And it was that window between, you know, retirement, I think, and, you know, potential dementia, that I decided that I would, you know, sit down and do something that I'd really always wanted to do, I think, and that was to write. And that's what I've done.
Have you done other sorts of writing during the time you were teaching as well, I imagine?
Look, I think I wrote a lot of school reports, I can tell you that much. But in terms of anything substantial or creative, no, I hadn't attempted anything along those lines. And The Map of William really was my first attempt at anything substantial.
Yeah. So it's a historical fiction, I guess you'd classify it as, and a coming-of-age story for a young man of 15. But you also had some background with your great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, mm-hmm. Yep. Having come to Australia, and so I guess you were drawing to some extent on that history.
Well, in 2019 I had a little window of time, and I actually went to Wales in that time, and I've got family in the United Kingdom, so I've got a niece who lives in Newport, which is not very far from Cardiff. And I decided I would go there on a whim, because I was in the process of doing a little bit of research on our own family history. And so that's the history of the Thomas family. And it was there I discovered, quite by accident really, that my great-grandfather, his name was Alexander Thomas, was convicted of a crime in Cardiff and sentenced to transportation to Western Australia. And I followed his story really from that point, and he arrived here in 1850 on board a ship called the Sindian, and within 12 months of his arrival he had been granted a ticket of leave, and he was free to roam the colony, to marry, to work, and it was his life really, I think, that was just the initial inspiration for the book. And it sort of began from that particular point. Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting to have a point of inspiration, but then the creative process takes over. To some extent, I think the research often leads you in directions you hadn't anticipated. Is that how it was with your?
I think very much so. I think what you discover certainly about your forebears and your ancestors are things that almost worthy of a book. And it wasn't so much Alexander himself, I think, but he married a woman. Her name was Louisa Caporn. And together they produced 9 healthy children. And I was able to gather information about her life and then subsequently the lives of her children. And then obviously my grandfather, whose name was also Alexander, and my grandfather as well. And so it really began as a research project into my own family history, and that research project subsequently turned into a novel, and the novel became The Map of William.
And I do find that I found with the story, even though it's a story predominantly about men exploring the William's father trying to find water places, as a surveyor, that was his job, to try and map those places. But the female presence was very strong in the book, through William's letters to his mother and his reflections on her influence on him. And the other women that they encountered along the way.
I think one of the things about a book like The Map of William is that it's a very male-centered book. You've got a journey of a young man, William, aged 15. His father, who is a man nearing his 40s. You've got a team of men together, and the problem, I guess, with a male-centered book is that I've always found that it's the female voice that provides that balance. And so one of the ways to include that female voice in the book was for William along the way to first of all encounter various women as well, and also to have the voice of his mother, who she's really a constant guide as he goes on his journey, that her voice is always inside his head. And one of the things about young William is that he admires his mother. He, unlike a lot of other young men, he listens to his mother, and her voice is always there guiding him. And I thought one of the ways to include a female presence in the book, really important for me to do that, was to have her voice constantly and continually whispering in his ear. Just sage pieces of advice, just a word of encouragement, and sometimes a word of censure as well. That she wasn't always nice to him. She was sometimes quite harsh as well. And it was a way for me to include a strong female presence. And I could probably go back to my own grandmother, and a lot of those kind of little snippets of advice, those little sayings. They're directly from her. She used to have all these little sayings that she would constantly say. Don't describe the sunset. The sunset describes itself. Those kind of sayings. I thought, well, it's a great nod to my grandmother, because she was an important person in my life. And in lots of ways, it's a nod to her.
And I thought the language was very authentic to the time. There's a kind of a slight formality to the language, and not that the book is not a formal book. There's different kinds of language in the book. Men amongst men speak differently than a young man writing to his mother. Which I was handled very deftly, and
Thank you.
Yeah. So, did you read some letters that had been written at that time, or is this just something that you've picked up?
It's interesting. I think when I sat down on the 5th of May, 2021, to begin to write the book, I had prior to that done a whole lot of research into my own family history. Okay. And so, you know, to that end, I'd been, you know, to the State Library. I'd read, you know, newspaper articles, obituaries, probate documents, wills, any number of letters. And so I had this language already kind of bouncing around inside my head. And it was this old-fashioned style of language. And I think one of the hardest things, I think, for any author, any writer, is to find, particularly when you're writing in the first person. So this book's written from the point of view of William, that he is the teller of the story. So when you're writing in the first person, it's very important to have a voice that is clear and succinct and it's consistent. And I think when I found his voice, that's when I found the story. And I think my opening line is, you know, my mother is a woman prone to tears. My father dries them gently and is slow to anger. I love them both in equal measure and find comfort in their love for one another. And when I wrote that first line in my garden, I knew then that I had my story, because it really is a story of family.
It's just, there's a lot of love in that family, which is a really nice juxtaposition against the brutality of some of the people within the story, such as, you know, Jardine. That also provides a lovely balance, I've found.
I think one of the things when you're writing a story like this is that obviously there's black and white, and there are shades of grey, and I think that part of the human condition is that nothing is ever as it appears and nothing is as it seems. There's always, you know, a nuance, and there's always shades of grey in the actions that human beings undertake. And so even a man like Harold Jardine is probably not your typical villain in that there is a fair bit of nuance to him, and there are reasons why he acts the way that he acts. Not that you would condone any of his actions, because his actions are pure evil in some cases. But there are reasons why he acts the way that he acts. And I think that for me, when you're writing a character like him, I think it's important to not paint him too darkly, but to in some ways try and find a level of empathy even for a character like him, and I think that there's a skill in that to actually have some empathy for the villain of the story, and to not take sides, and to perhaps understand the reasons why the man acts the way that he acts, and so on. So
I think it's essential. It's one of those things that provides the authenticity to the story, because you know, otherwise you just set up a kind of a false kind of tension there. And the handling also of the history of Western Australia with the Aboriginal people who were here first, and who were so you know, knowledgeable about the land and everything else, and that the interaction between the two, how was that in writing that part of the story?
Well, difficult, I think, having grown up in Carnarvon, having spent a lot of my time with my father, who was a shearer, worked on sheep stations, and having interacted with Indigenous people, really for all of my formative years, right up until I was a teenager, I had a little bit of an understanding of some of the Indigenous history of Western Australia, and I thought that with a story like this, very important to incorporate that to ignore it would have been almost disingenuous, really. So
it's an erasure, isn't it?
That's right.
And I think that it really, you can't write a story about that time without bringing in. And I think in terms of characters, it's from William's point of view.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's not putting a voice to the people that you can't do, but you're actually seeing it from William's point of view.
Well, I think that when you take that point of view, and you take William's point of view, what you're able to then do as a writer is you're able to filter some of those things that were terrible and harsh, and you're able to see them from a very innocent point of view. And I think that for William, he is seeing what he's seeing for the very first time, and as he sees them, he's forming his own opinion about what he's seeing. He is interacting with Indigenous people. He is speaking to them. He is forming relationships with them. But he's also seeing what is happening to the place that he's living in. Mm. And as he traverses across the desert with his father, and as he begins to see things in a different light, I think often for you and I, as people who didn't live in that time, and perhaps people who don't really understand, and people who don't really know, for me it was almost, as it was for William, a journey of discovery for myself. Something that I perhaps needed to do as an author was to educate myself about the Indigenous history of our great state of Western Australia. And so William's journey is almost, to a degree, a mirror to my own, to some extent, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense, and it was a question I was going to ask you about the relationship of then and now, and there is something about the...
Okay, I might just get a copy.
Yeah.
There is something about the coming of age of... you know, William, and the coming of age of Australia as a country. I mean, I think it's particularly relevant around the voice referendum.
Yeah.
But there's a kind of a gradual, hopefully, increasing awareness of the history.
Yeah.
And,
in response to that, I think what I see, certainly in the book, is it The Map of William is really a book about hope. Mm. That, despite everything that's happened, I think there's this traction of hope that I think underlines the entire book. And I think, just in terms of what we've been through as a nation, and with what you've mentioned with the voice, I see a positive future. I see hope there, and. With this book, I think that one of my messages, I think, in writing the book was that through everything that's happened, I think that we need to, first of all, embrace our past and embrace our history.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we need to have a message of hope in there, and we need to move on from that with the knowledge that our Indigenous people have suffered, and they have been through so much in their history. And I think that level of empathy is something that as I started to research and as I started to read and to speak and to learn, that certainly grew in me, that level of empathy and understanding. Yeah,
it's and the heroism of the people, the Indigenous people who had, had such such difficult encounters and had suffered so much, and yet there's a kind of a generosity William and his father, and that's really touching, and I think it is quite accurate about the people have actually been welcomed into this country in many ways, and I think that's quite humbling, really.
I think if you look at a character like William, like Howell Watson, his father, and one of my other characters in the book, or both of them really, Samuel Grace and Donald Campbell, who is the young sailor, is that these were men who took other men at face value. And so they take a man such as Harold Jardine at face value. They take a man such as Rover, who is one of the key characters in the story, an Indigenous man, a young man. They take him at face value, and they see his quality. And later on in the book, they meet Walala, who is the ancient Indigenous man, and they also take him at face value. And they see that these men have got an ancient wisdom, they've got great character, they've got great strength, and they're the qualities that human beings admire in each other, and that's irregardless of their race. And so these are men who certainly become friends, but I would even go so far as to say, Iris, that there is a deep connection between all of those men, to the point where I don't really want to use the word love, but there is such camaraderie that they develop, you know, through shared adversity for sure, and certain. So there is that part, but I think just through mutual respect, and that is a part of the novel that I really wanted to flesh out, you know, to explore that part of the novel, because I think I know that when I originally put in the submission for the Map of William, I think I wrote something along the lines to my editor that there are lots of good blokes out there, and I think that I would like to write about them. And so this is really a story about good blokes, you know, and they're all good blokes who support each other, connect with each other, and dare I say it, love each other. You know, and so in terms of a coming of age story, yes, it is that. In terms of a boy's own adventure, I think it's partly that, but I think it's more about a connection, first of all, between father and son, so William and his father, and then a connection between every single one of those men with each other, and then together. And I think that's what the story, that's the very heart of the story, I think.
And I think that definitely comes through. I think that definitely comes through in the book, and it's you know, it and it is an important element, or I guess it is the core of the book, really, isn't it? It's that that camaraderie. I won't say brotherhood. It's a, it's more of a you know, it is providing a positive kind of view of male support for one another, and I think that's a very much needed these days.
I agree. I agree, and I think that was really. As I sort of project my own, I guess my own plan as a writer in the future, I think that will be more or less at the core of most of my writing, I think, is that camaraderie, that mateship, that connection between men. And I think it's a theme, it's certainly a theme that isn't explored perhaps as often or as much as it needs to be. I think it's almost, to some degree, untouched in a lot of certainly modern literature, but I think that for me, it's going to be my way forward, I think, as an author, and I think most of my books will have that element to them. If I happen ever to be published ever again, that will be probably the theme of most of my books, I think.
I think it's such an important thing and so timely, and because there's a, you know, I think there'd been a recalibrating what it is to be a good man and a decent man, and I think there's definitely a need for that to be explored and to be
Definitely
teased out in the modern age.
For sure, and certain. I mean, I grew up, as I mentioned, on a sheep station. Sheep stations with my father, so. Spent a fair bit of my time in shearing teams, and in isolation. So you might be, you know, several hundred kilometres from civilization, really. And so men, to a degree, support each other in under those conditions and in that environment. And so I kind of, I learnt probably that living under those conditions really does bring out the best in some men. Another one, I first went out with my father to a sheep station. I think I would have been maybe 7 or 8, so very young. And I found myself in the midst of a team of shearers. There might be 8 to 10 shearers in a team, and then you have everyone else, the wool classer, and you have the board guys, and you have, there's a whole team of men. And I sometimes felt that I had not just one father, but I had lots of them. And so I've recreated a little bit of that, I think, in the map of William, that connection between men and the care that men have really for each other under those circumstances. And I think I've included a little bit of that in the book as well.
It's interesting, the shearing sheds. It brings back memories of when I was a child going to shearing sheds too.
We've got a lot in common.
It's quite this. You can never forget the smell, of the wool and the different
The sheep shit.
That's right. No, well, it's great. I think that's the thing with writing is that that it gets filtered through the writer, through the writer's experience, even if it's if the story is completely separate. There's a voice that comes through the writer's cumulative experience, and this is why I quite enjoy reading books by people who've had a lived a life, and had that experience to draw on, because it gives it a depth, I think.
In terms of that book, or this book, The Map of William, I don't think I could have written this 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. I think that there comes a little window in your life where you sit down and it gives you time to reflect and to think. And you're removed from the busyness of life. And as we are right now sitting in this in a beautiful garden here with all these power tools.
We can't
win.
The Fremantle Arts Centre in the and there's a lot of renovation going on here at the moment.
When you're sitting down in your own garden and you have time to think and to reflect, I think that you're then able to draw on a whole range of emotions and experiences and condense them all into a story that resonates and is coherent. And I think that for me, it was just that little window of time, that little moment where I could stop and breathe and I could think about that book, and I could think about the story that I really wanted to tell. And ahead of me, I had time to tell it, and I think that I think for any author, that's a gift. I think for many young authors, I think it's a difficult thing, because I think to make a living from writing is difficult. But when you reach a particular point in your life where you've made your living and you do have that element of freedom, that you're able to just sit back, take a breath, absorb it all, and say, what do I want to do with this story? How do I want to tell this story? And when that story is told, you think, well, I've got another story. How do I want to tell that one? And if you've got a third one, you've got time.
Yeah. The shaping of the story happens after the first draft is written, often, and there's a lot of work goes in after you've got the story out and the first draft is written. But I imagine there was information that didn't make it into the book that could potentially create opportunities for further stories.
It's interesting with that, because I'm now on at the tail end of my second book of William, and I've taken William 5 years ahead, so from 1909, it's now 1914, and we know that 1914 was the outbreak of World War One, and so William, I've taken him to war, but I've left behind everybody that he loves, and so all the characters in the first book, although they meet and they talk and they discuss and they interact at the beginning of the second book, William is now he's come of age, and I thought, because you've come of age, then you will leave hearth and home and you're on your own, mate. You know, so he's on his own, and he, you know, he's gone to war. He meets a whole raft of new characters, but his mother's voice is always there, praying for her son, that the men that he meets will be men like Samuel Grace and the men like Donald, the men like Rover, the men like Balala, and her prayers are answered, and he meets these men, these larrikins, these mates of his, and they go off to war together. And it's a different take on the Gallipoli story, but harrowing to write. And I'm in the last throes of that story now. It's just yet unnamed novel, and it's been a journey, very much like this book actually. It's been a journey to write the story.
I could imagine that having read the map of William, and you know, to read the sequel and to see how he develops and how that history, all the things that he learned on that trek across the country, will be wonderful to draw on, you know, in terms of how he is as a man and how he copes with the adversity of war and the horrors of war. But I think that's great. I'm glad you're continuing to write, it's timely, isn't it?
It's timely. I one of the things is that when you're writing a book, as an author, authors can fall in love with their characters. I think that when I wrote The Map of William, I started to admire my own character, this 15-year-old boy who, against all adversity, stood his ground, I think. He's a young man who stands his ground, and I think we all admire
courage.
And that courage is something that goes forward with him into the second book. Courage to, first of all, stand his ground and stand up for his principles, to not relent to what's happening around him, to be himself amidst the horror of it all. I think it was almost like a natural progression for my character. I thought that I had to take him forward. And I know that, just interestingly enough, with The Map of William, one of the things is that people, since the book has been out, people have been writing to me about the character. So I've got a raft of letters, and I recently got one about 2 weeks ago from a woman in Victoria, and she was 86 years of age, and she'd read the book, and she took the time to write to me about the new love of her life. And that love was William. And I thought, as an author, if you get a letter like that, it's a treasure.
It's beautiful.
It's treasure. And I know my daughter who read the book, before it was published, she was in the UK at the time. I went across to visit her. I gave her the book and she read it in a couple of days. And she said, I'm in love, Dad. I'm in love with William. Yeah. And I said, well, he's a bit young for you, darling. You're 25. He's only 15.
You can see the man that he is to become. Yeah. He's had these, he's shown his character, and he is a very, very likable character, but a very real character. He's not, you know, there's nothing wishy-washy about him at all.
No, he's got backbone. For a young lad at 15, he's got backbone, as have all the men in the book.
Yes.
And I think that I think it's an interesting thing, isn't it? I kind of look at all the men that I know, all my mates. I look at my neighbours, men across the road, you know, men I've worked with in the past. There are a lot of good blokes out there.
Mm.
There really are. And I think that William is not unique in terms of the young men of today. I mean, we tend to almost be very dismissive of the young.
Yeah.
But some of my favourite people in the world are, you know, under 20. You know, and around about that age of 20, because you know, they're refreshing, they have courage, the courage of their convictions, and so on. And so I think that one of the things with this particular book that I really wanted to do was to have a demographic that was really young. So a teenager could perhaps pick it up and get something from it. And then, you know, when you get a letter from an 86-year-old woman who says that she's in love with one of your characters, you know, I think I could have died and gone to heaven when I got that letter. So that's kind of like, you know, the thing that I really wanted to do with this book, is to have something that covered and went across the generations.
Yes. And I think it is a multi-generational book. You know, the characters are not all of the same age, and you've got, you know, you've got that as well, which and they're all very rounded characters, so congratulations on the
book.
And I really appreciate you taking the time for the interview, and so we'll hopefully see the next one.
Hopefully meet again
soon.
Fingers crossed.
Yes,
the Fremantle Press think, oh yeah,
right,
we'll publish this one as well. But you know, nothing guaranteed in this life.
So where can people purchase the book?
Well, the book is available, obviously, through the publishers, Fremantle Press.
Yes.
I believe it's online for sale right across a whole lot of online platforms.
Yeah.
It's for sale at Boffin's Bookshop in the city, and any number of bookshops around Perth as well.
Yeah.
I believe it's for sale in Norway. I think you can pick it up in Spain. I know that it's available in the United Kingdom, because my family over there have all got copies of it as well, which they've ordered online. And I think it's now available as an ebook, so you can download it as well to a Kindle. So the Map of William is out, it's about, and if you're looking for a really good story,
very much recommended.
Thank you, Iris.
Thank you, Michael.
A pleasure.
Well, thanks again to Michael Thomas for the lovely discussion today, and thank you again for listening. Until next time.